There you go. Thank you. No problem.
Take it from the top.
Test one, two. small little boat mucus.
Testing, 1, 2, good. Testing, 1, 2. Testing, 1, 2, good. Testing, 1, 2.
Yes, barely here.
Testing, 1, 2, good.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, we'll start in 1 minute. Representatives, take your seats. Okay, it's 1:45. We'll start in a Thomas Ball, Gail Barberi, Alex Chowdhury, Olivia Korn, Renee Cornell, Varun Devaka, Omar Dean, Osai Agarepa, Paris Hassan, Natalia Fernandez,
here.
Rebecca Kurz, Matthew Emily, Sruta Gurmati,
here.
Gabriel Kaufman, Savannah Lynn,
here.
Lee Lipschitz, Debbie Niedauer, Sarah Park, Grace Park, Marco Prato Ochoa, Samantha Romero Zavala, Christopher Shaw, Evan Shapiro, Jaywon Sim, Dara Tokuma, Mara Valdez, Ian Wallace, John Bon Kim,
thank you. Okay, let's start off by congratulating Natalia, who has been recognized. Yeah,
So in view of the trust that the community has vested in me.
Yes. In view of the trust that the community has vested in me.
As well as my personal sense of honor.
As well as my personal sense of honor.
I,
Natalia Fernandez.
Do solemnly affirm on this.
Do solemnly affirm on this.
The 15th day of February of the year 2018.
The 15th day of February in the year 2018.
To fulfill my responsibilities as a student elected representative.
To fulfill my responsibilities as a student elected representative.
I will engage in open and honest debate.
I will engage in honest and open and honest debate.
In a process where I'm guided by truth and fairness.
In a process where I'm guided by truth and fairness.
I will never purposely misrepresent facts.
I will never purposely misrepresent facts.
In an effort to achieve my goals.
In an effort to achieve my goals.
If a conflict of interest arises.
If a conflict of interest arises.
I will relinquish my right to participate in the decision making process.
I will relinquish my right to participate in the decision making process.
I will speak out and voice effectively.
I will speak out and voice effectively.
The interests and concerns of the student body.
The interests and concerns of the student body.
Address the issues to my fellow students.
Address the issues to my fellow students.
And strive to improve the quality of life and for health for all students.
And strive to improve the quality of life and for health for all students.
Congratulations. Okay, as far as the agenda goes, I'm going to amend it. I have a presentation first. The provost and CFO of the university are here to provide us a bit of an update and context on the Puerto Rico investments and our government agenda.
Okay, thank you. So, we're going to make a few initial general comments after the panel. Then, Vice President Smackdown, we're going to talk about our domestic policy. And then I'm going to
make a little talk about the
specifics, right? So I'll make a few initial comments in general about our environment. Vice President Stefano will talk about our investment policy and the process we use for investment resolutions. And then I'll finally make some points around Glaucos and Puerto Rico. Just so that we're all on the same page with facts. So first of all, just generally about the endowment. Clearly also the endowment benefits every student in this room. It provides funding for programs and faculty and facilities that otherwise need to pay for through other sources, largely through tuition. About 78% of Cornell's endowment is restricted endowment. That means it's been given for a specific purpose by the philanthropic individual, and that means that we are required to use those funds only for those purposes. But only about 22% of the endowment is unrestricted and provides money to for us to use in about 25% of the total amount is restricted to financial aid. That's a critical component of allowing us to promote access to Cornell and fund our financial aid. Much of that, about 80% of the funding of financial aid, comes from our operating budget. So, just the facts about the endowment to start us off and get us on the same page. As I said, Vice President Stefano is going to talk about how we manage that endowment and how we manage issues like vendor requests for investment.
Thank you. Can you hear me? So, as CFO, one of my most primary responsibilities is managing the balance sheet. And the largest item on the balance sheet is our investments. And the strongest correlation to our financial results are our investment returns drive our financial results for the university. So primary responsibility is to make sure that we can maximize investments for our balance sheet, for the university, for our financial health, for the purposes that Provost Kotnikoff just outlined. Our investment portfolio portfolio is now over $7 billion. We just hit the $7 billion mark last month. It's the first time it's ever been over $7 billion. The portfolio is extremely complex. And it's very important for you to understand that our investment office, the investors that work there, do not invest directly in any fund. Their job is to hire investment managers. And those managers are the ones that then choose where we're going to be investing. And it's very important that we do not restrict the ability of those top managers on what they choose to invest. If we start restricting, we lose access to some of the best managers. And one of our temptations is to use the endowment for political and social causes. And while they may be very, very worthy, it's very difficult to justify the impact on the university. We also have to pay attention to our state and our federal laws that protect us to be a nonprofit. And there's a report that if any of you have not seen, it's called the Kalvin Report, K-A-L-V-E-N. It was a report written in 1967 by the University of Chicago. And I encourage everybody in this room to find the report and read it. And what was in the report, and the values are still along today in many universities, is it states that universities have a role of fostering the development of social and political values. It is owned and sponsored by critics, but it cannot be the critic itself. Universities cannot take collective actions on the issues of the day without endangering its existence and its effectiveness. So Cornell, in 2016, we actually had very substantive conversations with our board of trustees around the protocol for requests for divestment. And our basic principle, similar to the Kalvin Report, is that the university itself should remain politically neutral. There is a definition or a standard that we consider when we consider divestment, and that is that the act has to be morally reprehensible, where it's deserving of condemnation because of injurious impact that actions or inactions of a company are found on consumers, employees, or other persons, which perpetuate social harms to individuals by deprivation of health, safety, basic freedom, or human rights. So examples of morally reprehensible would be apartheid, genocide, human trafficking, slavery, and systemic cruelty to children, including violations of legal rights. So with that definition or consideration for considering divestment, we have developed some standards for considering. And the divestment has to have a meaningful impact towards collecting the specified term. And it will not result in disproportionate offsetting related consequences. Or the company in question contributes to harm so great that it is inconsistent. Goals and principles of the university. And we all know that there's many activities that do cause us a harm, but we do not want to descend to the definition of morally reprehensible. It can be legal, it can be widely practiced, it can be pursued by the community. And sometimes, divestment, the goal of what we're trying to achieve, divestment may not be the best avenue, perhaps possibility, educational initiatives, and professional scholarly consultation with government and other bodies. The process that our board approved is that if there's a governance group that wishes to request divestment, they must submit the request to the president, and they must include the position and the reasoning, which must clearly document the nature and magnitude of policies and practices that serve executive committee with input from the investment committee and the president to make a recommendation to the full board, and the full board with the input and whatever the vote is, certain decision is final. If the president doesn't agree that all five of the governing bodies ask the same resolutions with the same request, with or without the president's agreement, that resolution will be moved forward to the board in the process that I just said. So if that is the definitions and the descriptions, I would like to ask back to most copycats so we can speak specifically about this particular request and how it's going to be meeting the standard for the president's request.
Thanks, Mark. So, relative to the resolution, the draft resolution team, I want to make a few points about Outpost and Puerto Rico. So, from a factual basis, we're on the same page. I also have copies of these points for the SA and the press, because I think it's very important that we portray the underlying reality of all of that package. So, point number one, Seth Parnum is an alum. He heads Outpost Investment. He's also a generous and selfless donor to Cornell, for which we are extremely grateful. Second, Outpost is one of the firms used to guide the investment market. They do that very well, as intended to do. If they do not provide competitive value for the value against a down investment, we would not use that job. Third, Puerto Rico sought to borrow funds at the lowest possible price in an open bond. The borrowed capital has funded critical municipal projects such as schools, roads, pensions, etc. Outpost holds some of this debt. As do other investment firms, many Puerto Rican banks, many Puerto Rican citizens. Puerto Rico declared, and many U.S. citizens, excuse me. Puerto Rico declared a form of bankruptcy prior to Hurricane Maria and entered the process to restructure its overseen by federal agency. During that process, it suspended all payments on its bond obligations. The ability of Puerto Rico to address its financial obligations were of course enormously impacted by the hurricane. Payments will not resume until the restructuring is complete. Puerto Rico's finances are shared. It is in the interest of the bondholders for this to occur as quickly as possible. Outpost has indicated to the holders of the debt that they should be willing to accept less than overpayment as part of the restructuring of the island's debt. The new federal budget includes funding that will make it easier for Puerto Rico to restructure its debt. On this past Tuesday, Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosello released the revised fiscal plan projecting a surplus within the position. Eight, Cornell's investment from Outpost will not help Puerto Rico and would be extraordinarily unlikely to alter the political terms of the debt. And then finally, Cornell as an institution, as all of you know, and as a community, including students in this room, has reached out to Puerto Rican students and currently has the highest number of students enrolled in any private institution in the country. Such as no traditional union board, providing nothing to provide transit and transportation roles and other needs. That concludes my comments. I think John and I will be willing to take any questions. And as I say, I'd like to please talk about the USA and the time to be included in any varsity practice.
Thank you. Wait, do we, can someone, with the distribution? With the person. Thank you. Okay, I bet. So we will go to questions next. So if the SA members wish to speak, just raise your hand and flag is up on you. If any community members have any questions or comments, there's a mic over there. Please just come up to the mic and I'll call you for you. And just to be transparent at the beginning, we do have some time constraints, so the last question will be taken at 5:25. And this is the questioning will be over by 5:30. So Myra's going to go over the names and then she's going to make you guys go to the and talk to Myra. Right, so to begin with, my name is Zach Schneider, one of the sponsors. Ask a question.
Hello. First of all, I'd like to thank you for coming. Accepting our invitation to come out and discuss these issues this week. We think a lot to us as students, definitely after all the work that we've put expressing our concerns to the well-being of Weirdo and this university as an institution. So I'd like to start out with a question kind of regarding the content investment. So in the Cornell annual report, Cornell does kind of mandate guidelines on certain types of investments, such as Cornell does not invest in derivatives unless it's hedging risk, such as an interest rate swap. So kind of looking at this, whether it's an instrument of distress debt or can be fit into some type of financial category, is Cornell allowed to be expressing kind of selective constraints in terms of managers? So with the Cornell is contracting manager saying, not to be using derivatives in this manner, or not to be using distress debt in this manner, such as how it's been used in Puerto Rico. So that's kind of my first question regarding can preferences be kind of enlisted on people managing funds and Cornell's equity partnerships and managed equity. And then the second question comes about regarding just the overall situation in terms of the criteria that's particularly, I think it's fluid in terms of tangible impact regarding the funds being used and how they're impacting people, such as in the case of the possible investment, have access to a very large portion of funds. I mean, value of Cornell's potential for debt holdings is significantly lower. However, it does have significant implications in terms of politics and lobbying regarding the advisory board. So I think those are two of the main concerns regarding the Puerto Rico debt.
And so I think I answered the first part of the question that had to do with limiting the type of instruments that we use in the process. The way our investment office works is there is a board investment committee, and then there are various subcommittees. And there's a subcommittee on hedge funds that reviews the risks and the rewards of various types of investments. And they go through a very thorough review of the types of investments that, that the university would consider as part of the portfolio. And then once that's resolved, we look for managers that invest in those types of investments. The ultimate goal is, as I mentioned earlier, is to improve our returns. So 10 basis points, a 10 basis point change in our investment return has huge implications on our overall university. The second part was.
Well, sorry, I think if I understand the second part of your question, do we ever, in terms of the cost of fuels or debt involvement, do we get involved in restricting or that's a question. The answer here is that, as Vice President DeStefano said, we, the managers, make decisions about investments that are generally large investment portfolios rather than individual investments. So, in that case, what would happen? So we don't have a choice to have individual investment components of those larger vehicles. What would happen if we impose what you were discussing would be we would just not be eligible for those larger investment vehicles, which is the president's definite point, limit success or not.
Yeah, I think it addresses a lot of these points. A lot of other people have questions, so I'm go all day.
Next is Nick from the Sun. Yeah, please let us know.
I'll just be super quick. My question is just about, in the past, I guess it's been very big. I'm not sure how long you've all been here, but the late 80s with apartheid in South Africa. And my dad taught here, he was arrested by criminal police for protesting against that. And also, it led to prominent scholars leaving Florida. Henry Louis Gates cited that in 1989 as a reason for leaving. And another professor said, I was about to turn Duke down when the trustees voted as they did, and I held on to the offer. Are you concerned that this might become an issue in which prominent scholars or influential employees find it troubling, the investments here? And I also think, I want to grant that this is a much more complicated issue because I think that there's a huge amount of investment for you that almost all
Thank you. I am concerned. And I think it's that concern and the concern on the part of the trustees that led to the very robust discussion and innovation policy that Joanne has described. Just a minute to describe that process. That process involves presentation by faculty and students for the trustees, a vigorous presentation of the merit of divestment from prosecutors, other points of view around that issue, and then the recognition we really didn't have a policy and consistent way to judge one request versus another. And then that led to a process that Vice President Stefano had that looked at our peers and then discussed with our trustees the ranking process, what we and what are the appropriate issues, and that's been described. So if you think we have an appropriate and defensible policy that we need to take, one is allow us to divest when we meet this threshold, and then also not divest when requests come through that are well-meaning
reasonable, but do not do that. 2006, the Sudan was the last.
So there are some SD members I want to speak, but I'm going to prioritize the members. Next is Elizabeth Chief.
Very familiar with it. Could you be a little bit more transparent about exactly Augusta campaign had to do and to meet the threshold that we see was necessary to be more representative and more effective enough. And also, you know, how do we know that this isn't just another stalling tactic so that we can control that who graduates and then looks at no one else about them?
A little touch on it. We developed this policy. It's a standing board policy. I think it inspired the congressional that needed to be met. The way it operates is that the Board of Trustees is voted on that. The case would be made that any investment proposal meets this threshold. We provide two mechanisms that are also to get to the Board of Trustees. The resolutions that the president approves and sends to the board, or resolutions that are from a number of the assemblies, from all the assemblies that bypass the president, put directly to the board. The DeVette approved the DeVette proposal at the support of all the assemblies went to the board and they still did not meet this threshold.
Yes, but the first question was, what threshold is that exactly? Because we should determine that which metric can determine whether the divestment proposal does or does not meet that threshold.
So it's designed to be a strict threshold because otherwise you would have a clause that can be requested on the two contracts. So I gave you the definition, but the examples that we would consider are the apartheid, the genocide, the human trafficking, slavery, that level of activity would be considered to be divestment.
So could you clarify, for instance, why Nigerian oil and everything that shut them up in Ecuador is more valuable than Sudan's oil to divestment?
I really don't think it's appropriate to comment on that, other than to say your assertion would have to be agreed to. That is, that those actions are morally reprehensible, meet this threshold, would need to convince the majority of the board that it meets that threshold. That's the same standard. There's nothing non-transparent about this. We publish the standard, and the trustees can apply the standard to any proposal and promote their conscience on
it. And the trustees, if that's what you're talking
about, is the bottom. Plus, there's a lot of people in this atmosphere. I think that's one of the solutions. Next is Chris. And Chris is also one of the sponsors of the resolution.
Hi, thank you. So I just wanted to ask, why are you doing this policy? We discussed all these numbers. I think personally, this case is obviously more of a personal topic. So the only reason that we put the process that we're going to do is possible is because Congress and the Supreme Court directly legal infrastructure exactly the same status. No corporate status for some peace opposition that we're doing this poverty or that people rights. So I feel like something that's obviously the only reason why this process is possible, why top senior bondholders and other bondholders can lobby the oversight board to pass the austerity measures, which come at a time when Puerto Rico has a 52% poverty rate and a 60% child poverty rate, only because they're treating the same process. So I feel like that's not so much a political statement as it is saying all people are just a quality, which I feel like was kind of Puerto Rico's one of the things. I mean, Cornell did an incredible thing, and it's history. 62 students are at the University of Puerto Rico. And that being on that topic, we're also grateful for the really amazing opportunity here. I just feel like having come on with us and some of the suggestion would be that we focus
to the change in the overall government process so they're not treated as citizens. Putting our efforts into something that actually has an impact would be more powerful than divestment statement that no one has an impact.
Let me just add one thing, which is I just think we have to be very careful about laying all the problems that we've outlined at the feet of investors who have purchased bonds that Puerto Rico has offered. If people don't purchase those bonds, or if fewer people are in the market to purchase those bonds, it costs Puerto Rico more money to borrow to do the kinds of investment projects that it wants to do. So, much of what you said, I don't think anybody would disagree with in terms of the difficulty of Puerto Ricans. But I just be very careful at describing all of that difficulty to individual investors who bought bonds that have been issued in the trade by the Puerto Rican government.
Thank you. That says we're all.
So you mentioned that Farming would be willing to accept a less than full payment. Then why has he spent so much money, specifically $2.9 million, in lobbying against negotiated payment?
I don't know the statistics that were data that you're citing. I think what we're in is a process here of restructuring debt. The question is, how much of the original obligation to pay back to investors who provide capital will actually return to those investors? And that's obviously something that the investors are interested in maximizing, but also interested in making sure, as I said in my comments, that Puerto Rico is financially stable and able to make a payment. Destabilize territory if it serves normally. So part of this is in the normal negotiation between what can you do and how can I get the most out of what I invested. That understanding, I'm not going to come over here, not get anything back by investment.
But to sort of follow up on that, what do you think then the best sort of solution to get the most returns for the investors to actually participate in the economic restructuring of the government and by lobbying through its lobbying efforts how is that helping?
Well, I think they are participating in this in the sense that they're part of the restructuring negotiation. I mean, how much gets paid back to those lenders? Outposts is one of them, or many others, is really a negotiation in a bankruptcy hearing around what we can pay, what will be counterproductive in terms of destabilizing Puerto Rican government, and how one negotiates a fair solution to both of them. I don't think it's appropriate to ascribe negative motivations to the individuals who are really participating in that process, but trying to make sure that their investors may get much back.
That's one more question. Yeah, so this is in regards to the sort of transparency aspect of our resolution. If our period executions like Princeton, Harvard, and Yale all deployed, for the partnerships.
So, as I mentioned earlier, we are not direct investors, and so we don't directly invest in just hire managers. What I don't know is, and I will check, is what's disclosed by the Robert Christie and Yale is that their direct investment activity or not? But I will follow up.
Next is TJ.
Thank you. not divest or not as an institution that didn't take actions that would be political, but Cornell as an institution fundamentally takes political actions. Cornell has extended protection to African students, both as an allowed guns on campus, and these are other things that are very much political matters. Furthermore, like Cornell has partnered with institutions and governments like that in a political matter. And you say that Cornell divesting from the Puerto Rican debt wouldn't have an impact. Even if it wouldn't have a monetary impact, it's still condoning the status of Puerto Rico. And by divesting it, it would send a message. And just the sending of that is really important, and it should be lost in financial data. Also, to reference another point, we talked about how apartheid is considered more of a principle, and part of the reason that apartheid is considered more of a principle is because it's an extension of colonialist truth in 19th and 20th century. And combining two quarters of the debt after they were forced into that financial situation, the continuation of that same colonialist infrastructure, which came on by the black and brown bodies, you're continuing to go about this wonderful oppression to continue. And just like to address the final point, you talked about how Cornell is sponsoring more students from University of Puerto Rico than any other private institution in the U.S. I think that's great. I do appreciate that. I think that's a great action. Cornell's investments more than offset that by the implicit in the financial pressure of this time. And I just think it was a really important point to consider beyond just the data and the numbers. I think this is very much an important issue.
Well, I certainly respect your opinion on that. Let me just make a couple of comments around DACA and this issue of making a purchase for investment. Our DACA support for existing DACA students is not a federal statement. It's a statement of how we continue to support students that we are enrolled at Cornell and make sure that they are separate from a change in policy to the extent that we can. That's not making a political statement. One administration or another administration, I view it personally, is making a statement of support to our students and continuing to try and provide access to students who benefit from Cornell education. I would distinguish that from overt political statements. If you may recall, we were requested to declare sexual status and other further statements that were deemed somewhat political and probably not meaningful in terms of what we would actually do. In fact, do not provide information that students to be to ICE officers and federal officers, but we do obey warrants and federal warrants if they issue them. On this issue of statements, that is precisely the point that the policy is meant to consider. Because your political statement may be quite different than somebody else's. And once we start that process, we're really in the game of not trying to do what our announcement really does at the university. We're using our announcement to make critical statements, and now we have a judge which political statements can make, which not to make. How do we not allow that to damage the university in both financial ways and in ways that relate to public confidence in what our primary mission is and where our primary mission is. You are not fundamentally.
It is 5 minutes left, but I have one last question. So, come from Dave.
Hi, thanks. Thanks so much for coming today. I think that. I'm not going to weigh in on specifically, whether we should or shouldn't treat the best, but I think one useful piece of information for us to have before we make a decision or before any of the government's bodies makes a decision, would really just be like, how, like, if we were to pull our money out of Outhouse or the endowment for benefit, we would move it somewhere else. Like, what impact on the operating budget would that have on average? Just so that we can quantify in terms of dollars, like, the impact of moving it out. So I think that would be like a helpful piece of information for us to know, if, you know, if you can't get that out like that.
So if we put just that specific impact and gave you the number that could not be that, what the real impact would be is the stretching on managers and their ability to be able to invest. And we've worked hard to get to the top tier managers. So in the calculation, what we would do is okay, now we have to other community monthly arguments that the stronger reason to invest than before the refill because they understand it's not really helping. So we go over to the next tier managers, our returns are going to be, it could be $100 million to be
I guess the last point I would make is this is no different than any other university. It's functional no different than any university. Now, if we all made this decision, it's different, you know, this our hospital is perhaps not even a professional endeavor, but we're all trying to do change, which is to try and deserve this serious debt, to have serious most egregious kinds of activities that we don't want to be
called. I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, next, we will go into the background.
Are there any members of the community that would like to speak at this time? Okay, with that, we'll be closing up the
microphone. All right, this is really fast. I'm asking about the approval of the minutes. Can I have about like 30 seconds for those questions? It's under Oxcom, just G, part two.
I would just like to scratch five. I don't think that's what TJ was intentionally saying. They don't want to have any others.
If there's no second, then second that. Dissent, say to dissent.
Just because it says, it's said, like, the said and said.
Okay, then we're about to vote. All in favor of voting. Rebecca, is the motion to scratch off five of you?
Yes.
Okay, the motion is to scratch off.
Okay.
favor? Raise it high. All those against? Abstentions? By vote of 20, 0 to 22, 0 to 1, passes. Alright, any dissent? If not, is that a dissent? Not that, it's been approved. Alright, thanks guys. Next, we'll go straight to announcements and reports. Alexis Pulido, I'm going to call something. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us. My name is Alexis. I'm the chair of the Active Policy Committee. I'm sure I'm the Active Policy Committee. She's the vice chair. this semester we've worked on something really exciting, which we started planning last semester, but now we've actually it's a survey about people. So last semester we were kind of groups from kind of resolutions that we work on, and we got a lot of complex things about people. And this was not just limited to our committee. I think a lot of students feel pretty good about it. So we've got the link to the survey, and we appreciate it if you could all share it on your Facebook page, because that's the most amazing way that we're getting feedback from it. We've done that in the past with other surveys that we've sent out, and it's been pretty successful.
I would also told that there's going to be a communication class sent out to the entire student body, and potentially it could include
in that email, so that's possible. Does anyone have any questions or comments for the lecture? Okay, thanks so much, guys. Next is Neil. Shabani, can you press the mic, please?
So I just have three major points that I got from the GPSA meeting. One is that they're looking to review the possibility of having a professional computing initiative, which is kind of like the report defines Apple and private professional students. Also, we're using Slack and to and their resolution recommending changes to policies concerning
hello everyone. So Annabelle's grocery is going to be doing a February break away tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Durland Alternatives Library, which is basically right next to Annabelle's. And so to participate, you have to join the Shoppers Club. I'm going to send a link out to members of the assembly. If anyone from the community wants to know what the link is, shoot me an email or something. And then I think it's EAD33. That's it. It's free.
Thank you. Next is Rob Kurtz.
So the Cornell Design and Tech Initiative is recommending to create an event planner for our campus, and they want to accept this feedback. So if everyone would like the next 2 weeks, if anyone's interested in meeting with them, talking about all the local appointments, let me know, I'll get in contact with the project manager. Just want to feedback on what we'd like to see in the app.
All right, next is Gabe.
So I actually have two. One is a question, and the other is a report from Apps Council. First, I heard that Annabelle is having financial difficulties. Could you speak a little bit more about those?
I can't speak too much about this time, just because I think we were meeting last week, and it's been waiting before that was last semester. But I don't have that mentality in regard last meeting, I can get that information to you. And there's like other developments happening that will be coming out in the future as well. That will help solve the funding.
Oh, yeah, and then my announcement is that AppsCom approved a special project request to allocate $720 to sexual assault awareness. So. Yeah.
So Jaylon has an update on the Veteran Task Force.
Hi everyone. So we met yesterday at the hall, and we basically discussed about like how we should go about with the reform process, and we basically brainstormed ideas. And I also shared, if you remember, when I sent out a survey to everyone, like we got 640 responses, and I basically shared raw data from the survey with our members, and they are going through the comments individually. We are basically summarizing them to see like what we can actually act on. And we also have two designated liaisons to Cornell IT and the admin, so that they'll be able to find out more about how medical finances work. So like how people, where the income comes from, and also like what they're spending their money on. So
Thank you. So we're waiting for Scope Day to present at 5:45, but we do have 5 minutes. So I'm gonna postpone resolution to be after the Scope Day presentation because I think that's gonna be something along the line. So let's go straight to resolution before I'll look at the SE surplus. So the sponsors are here. So this also has like a matter of our rules. If I want to change the agenda, you'll have a second.
So, resolution 24 was on the agenda at the end of the last semester. Those of you who were here last semester, about almost 2 years ago now, the resolution, the assembly passed a resolution asking for the allocation of part of the student assembly surplus to go to the creation of a program called the Student Campus Life Fellowship Program. The exact specifics were lacking in the resolution, so the money never got allocated. And the intention of resolution 24 this year is to finally allocate those funds that were sent to be set aside from the surplus 2 years ago and to get the appropriate campus at the benefit of campus community, specifically referring, as the other resolution did, to organizations with the specific organizations that support a variety of issue areas that are currently not addressed, including but not limited to students with disabilities, veterans, first generation students, etc. And the money will not be taken directly out of the account immediately, rather we're going to ask the Vice President of Student Campus Select, Vice President of the party, to review applications for these funds. And once the select organizations, the assembly will approve the selection and then take the money for surplus for the organization.
All right, all those in favor. Okay. Could you give your hands up, please? Sarah, are you going? All those against? All right, 23-0 to 1 passes. All right, is Scope Day here, by any chance? Okay, you want to start now? All right, well done, guys.
atmosphere, the selection process was country. We wanted to make sure that people were going to be satisfied with the not. Because in the past, it's been a little hard based off of the funding that we get from you guys, based on the new initiatives that we go after, and based on those kind of changes in the music industry in the year. And so, again, taking all the feedback into consideration, thinking about what the student body wanted, and like an extra otherwise what they wanted, we're happy to announce that Atlantis is going to be our partner. With special guests, Young Bombs, and Tracy. So all together we have an Ian, Pat, and I work with a hip-hop artist in 11 p.m. DJ, for the next year. We're really excited. We hope that you guys are as well. In addition to my announcement, we also would like to talk a little bit about moving forward with other Slow J initiatives. Practice in the past, you guys have been local and provided funding, and now that we have our artists solidified and we know that will have affected our budget, we're going to be asking for those projects again, hoping for you guys to help fund the practice until we are again self-sufficient in the future, considering that we just recently were going to have a dollar increase per student for our future budget. So, and if you guys have any questions about that or the artists or selection process,
yes, I'm going to keep you questions about so we know the SA no longer has as much money as we did before. first one speaks this.
Good to see you again. So yeah, so the first thing I want to say is congratulations. I don't think that you know you get enough of the amount of work you do. But on a more somber note, the SA, you know, doesn't have as much money as we used to have. You know, that's for a variety of reasons. You know, as you may or may not be aware of. 4 minutes ago, we just gave away $15,000, and there are a variety of reasons for that. But I just want to make you aware that we might not be able to provide as much support as we used to be able to provide. So I just wanted that to be on the record.
Absolutely, it's good. And again, we're not trying to ask for this for it's more like we just need that support in order to continue working to make sure that something is safe. As well as fun. This is one of the things that I have been pushing in. It's really gaining traction because, as we can see from your year, that the number of alcohol induced illnesses are kind of over the picture being happening, they have really gone down because we have been able to get through the people's values before they spoke as well on the slope. So, just like keeping that in mind that if you're looking at the utility of what also they are doing to students, hopefully then we'll also consider that whatever we can give us.
Thank you very much.
Next group.
So two things. One, can you just repeat the names of the group?
Young Bombs.
Young Bombs.
Yeah, they are little DJ and Tweezy. She's a African-American female hip hop artist.
And then another thing, I think some members of the rescue group are still here. It might be beneficial to up your requests, not necessarily a whole email. Scratch that. What was the request for this year? 20 versus what was in the So I think that the other thing that we were discussing was the ability to request more significant increase to jump to the next tier of performers. So just I don't know if that has been a discussion internally, but great to pass that on to whoever in the future would be
interested.
So my understanding the amount of money that Snow Day has is only essentially allowed for a certain material. If you wanted to get any more of the A-list performer, you would need more money.
So I will say, a lot of the cost that came out of the 250 or so that we have goes towards static items such as like logistics and our administrative costs. So the flexibility that we have within our artist bucket is the only flexibility we have because we do have to pay for the state, we do have to pay for it, all other things that are required for the event to actually take place. So happy for $10,000 increase or whatever. In that realm doesn't actually put too much on the artist's tier because altogether we still have to fill 3 to 4 hour performance, so it's not going to be one artist, it's always going to be more than one artist because nobody performs more than an hour and a half or so, but if we ever reach that kind of performance, there's a headline that's going to be. So we have to accommodate that $10,000 if we can to 2 hours. So again,
right,
your artist will be affected by such.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So instead of doing like a $1 increase or a $2 increase, like that, people would be willing to hear like a $10 increase or something like that.
Yeah, but are you guys able to provide that? Is my question.
We will be able to, because I do think if you make a compelling
argument. Well, I know it's too good for me.
Right, but I'm saying if you pass that information along to your organizations and that future generation requires a significant increase so that future generations.
Next is Becca.
I just want to say thank you for all of our work you did and making the lunches happen again for like a year and a half. And I think the rest of the student assembly would agree that Slope Day is like one of the most special events and all of the work that you put into it really shows. So thank you, and you are going to help with whatever you need.
Okay, so that is it for questions. Once again, I would also like to say thank you for your time to be all of you for your time. Okay, we will go back to the business of the day. We'll go to Resolution 28, the Puerto Rico debt and disclosure.
Real quick, I think
think the act, I think the act would be really interesting question. I'm curious to understand what meets the criteria of divestment, and we start discussing what it means to work. And I think all of us would agree that they have second class treatment, really understanding that people are outside of us is not really their intention. The phone is not our intention. How can I say these people are uncivilized? But that's what I'm saying. I think it's very clear that the topic of Puerto Rico is one of their principles. Again, it's the last one. It's a 50% child poverty. It's a 60% child poverty. 52% poverty. Almost more than half the islands are Medicaid and Medicare. It's a poverty. It's a very hard way for specialists online, you know, leaving the island every year. So I really want to just say that, like, it's there's no need to compare what's going on in Puerto Rico to, you know, apartheid or genocide. You don't know, I do not need to compare what's happening to my people to what's happening to our people. What happens to me, it's just like, it totally makes sense. That's one of the reasons. I understand that people think it's not my choice to be. You can't disagree with what's happening. There's a clear answer, and that is that a group of people that can't vote, subject to a government that doesn't believe that most any creates passes laws that discretion from investors is one of the principles. Shows that their lives don't matter. That is insulting, and that is very grateful. I will say that again and again. I'm going to stop saying that. So there's two more things. One is that the previous speaker mentioned that the governor of Puerto Rico release a budget that predicts a surplus. That rests on the assumption that Puerto Rico gets $50 billion a day. They only got 17. That's not going to happen. There's going to be no surplus today. Puerto Rico is going to try and request to convey as it has in the past, but as it has the will, it will not be able to do this. So the surplus is not going to happen. That rests on the assumption that housing is going to be much worse than Puerto Rico. And once more, progress is not due to Puerto Rico. Again, with the bankruptcy process, the way previous speakers framed it, though, was to presuppose that Puerto Rico chose to enter the bankruptcy process. Puerto Rico attempted to restructure its debt under Chapter 9 of the state's decision, and it was put by Congress to answer. So again, this process is a consequence of the former status quo. And again, I think I'm not going to mention some major points. I just want to stress again that we are the students of Puerto Rico, we decide what we think is what we're going to do. We don't need people to tell us what is and isn't. We are students of this university, we are all accepted this university because we are capable of making decisions on our own and making decisions. And we all believe that everyone's in this country is wrong and the choices of the human beings, and we are able to say, we do not need people to tell us what our moral compass is and is not. And you all, again, helped out Puerto Rico last semester. You saw prison justice. You gave $10,000 to this fund that helped the PRC to do today. I ask that you do that again today. I recommend that the university invest in dollars. Yes, I recognize that this is a solid access. And I think about Puerto Rico, check the news about Puerto Rico. I am not naive enough to think this is a solid problem that face Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico needs equality, it needs equitable government funding, it needs equitable SSI funding, it needs correct government, it needs to equally be the same thing as protection of the law. I recognize this is a solid crisis. Very least, recognizing how insulting this is for the people. Recognizing previously you mentioned that we need to send a lot of support documents to impact our students. First, there are people reading to you. What we do with our investments and how those investors impact Puerto Rico reflects how we care about Puerto Rico. So it's the same thing. The same thing is shown up to me here. I'm not creating the issues with the policy. So, I mean, all that being said, I ask that you all vote for the resolution. I think you all vote support that you've shown in Puerto Rico, and I apologize for having the PPC in the conversation because it's on the same page. I just wanted to clarify what I think was important for it. It wasn't an accurate material, but that makes it easier. And I just wanted to continue to recognize all of you and the university. So I appreciate your time. Thank you for this approach on Puerto Rico. I hope that you can do better today.
Well, yeah, fabulous points there, Chris. And I mean, what you're saying is just so central to our argument and actually kind of factors into when we make this request to divest or make this request to the president to the committee, actually asking for other bodies to get it directly up for consideration by the trustees. And to do that, it needs to be a compelling case. And he's really outlined why it's a compelling case. So I would kind of be walking through kind of some of the details tracing the involvement of Rob Fox and other funds and how that affects Puerto Rico and all the other kind of more specific things you might be wondering. So kind of to get started on that, I trust you, Bob, kind of read the clarification Bob was made. I think knowing some of those things are good, that like a lot of the clarifications are good and do benefit Puerto Rico, but when you look at the overall situation in totality, the actions of this hedge fund, as well as others that we could potentially be investing in, are actively hurting the welfare of the Puerto people. So before I could have discussed the kind of divestment and all of that, there's an amendment on the sheet that essentially clarifies the second whereas clause with the details of how it was provided yesterday. So it improves the accuracy in terms of a statement regarding remaking the local and austerity measures. Those were quoted from a letter sent to our president regarding the endowment. However, there was a more general statement and not specifically smart, and Barbara's took offense to an inaccurate generalization, and the new whereas clause essentially says the same thing, but it's not actually accurate, and I think that's important to be entered into the record. So, kind of starting on the points of narrative divestment, our key thesis here is our post political involvement in Puerto Rico's bankruptcy proceedings from four places past until the present has caused an intentional disproportionate economic burden to the well being and recovery of Puerto Rico. So that's very key to the central thesis. And I think when you look at all of these things in totality, it is a really reprehensible. So, or irreprehensible, I'm sorry. So, kind of just to walk you through this briefly, you can read it, click on the links kind of your own time. So, basically, the position this fund was bought into was in 2015. They bought about nearly $1 billion of Philippine bonds. So, now the fund has the bonds and it's trying to ensure a higher payment because it bought the bonds. Now, to increase the payment, Farmland and Fund spent $2.9 million to lobby for Promesa, which establishes the advisory board, which has some provisions regarding Puerto bonds and higher up on the payment prior to this. So that improves the holdings of his debt. And then the debt was bought through potential companies called Agrimon Holdings. And there's an organization in Puerto Rico called the Coquina Seniors Coalition, and that is lobbying supposedly on behalf of retirees. But essentially, this coalition, which according to court filings, is almost the largest, and there's about 10 other funds that are all very similar in the mainland US. Minimum investment, about $25 million. So these funds are not small Puerto Rican retirees, they are millionaires in the United States and other organizations trying to profit upon lobbying and asking that. So this organization, if you go on the website, Compost are not even listed. The other funds are though. So then this specific organization is paying lawyers that are going around, you know, lobbying the government, Carter Rotello, the advisory board. And your stats on that are this group of like funds owns 33% of all Covina senior bonds, which comes from Covina, and then Compost owns 29% of what's. So that's kind of your channel of money and pensions. And then when you're looking at, well, how does this affect Puerto Rico? And if this group wins, why is it happening in Puerto Rico? So essentially, there's two groups of bondholders that are really clashing right now, the general obligation, which constitutionally protected. And that's kind of your general form of bond to be taken in the past. So then in 2006, when Puerto Rico needed more funds and to build additional tanks. And I mean, you can read the Filipino legislation, but they put these revenues from sales tax. So essentially, during the bankruptcy, if Filipino bonds are prioritized, it one violates Puerto Rico's constitution, and two, it's diverting cash away from GO bonds into Filipino bonds, which leaves less cash for GO obligations, which is that of the bankruptcy, Puerto Rico needs to. So when all of these investors that said, oh, we need to pay the debt because we can put the credit market. Well, if you pay the last one instead of first, Puerto Rico will not have access to the credit they need. That is a very key point, and it's kind of very obvious, but that's very central to why we shouldn't be investing in money within our post, within the Seniors Coalition, and Rufina, and First Nation as a whole in these proceedings. So, currently, Puerto Rico had a draft turnaround submitted by Ricardo Rosello this week. The board rejected the proposal and currently is in New York right now, resubmitting it to the board and reconsidering it. So, I mean, I think now is a very critical time to send a strong message to Cornell to say, well, we don't want to be a problem about these Puerto bonds. And this board is ultimately going to be deciding and how it's implemented. So, I think Cornell definitely needs to be accountable for investments and make a strong statement in favor of the people of Puerto Rico's long-term recovery and well-being.
I think about the board, which board?
The advisory board established by Mesa.
Okay.
Did everyone understand what you said? You know what we're referring to?
For Comesia?
Yeah, so when I said creative oversight board, sorry.
How does divesting from this affect the oversight board's decisions?
Okay. So, yeah, so essentially, when we have holdings through Outpost, which is one of the select hedge funds that comprises this bonding group, that the funds are essentially managing to get their return. So, all these funds are one third of these Cornell bonds, and if they did the repayment first, they get paid back at a higher value than par compared to the GEO. So, it's like they did a bunch of additional cash while the other issuances get less. Because, I mean, there's going to be a surplus, there's not a lot of cash to negotiate and pay back. So it pushes the other to get constrained cash flows for a general obligation and future securities. And then, I mean, obviously, the managers of these funds are going to be paid for the necessary and all of that. So they drop a lot from Cofina being first in this first viability of future cash flows and securities.
Okay, I'm going to go by the actual speakers list as we go along. Rojo, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just really wanted to emphasize what Chris pointed out. This is not a political issue, but rather a moral issue, you know, for us. And so, you know, for Carmen to, you know, to really be involved in this, it's an opportunity for him to act against the vulnerable economy. For him to, you know, have spent $2.9 million in lobbying efforts. You know, that goes to show that, you know, if you really care about, you know, resolving the issue and getting all this money back to his investors, that he would really be keen to find an opportunity to help with the restructuring of the Puerto Rican economy, which he hasn't done. And instead, he lobbied against Promesa, which would have allowed for the opportunity for a bigger restructuring. And so, given that, I really do hope that this is in favor of the resolution.
Thank you. Okay. So, I do think, since we discussed this last week as well, right? I do think it's fair that we cap this at 6:20 and I will ask for a vote at 6:20, which is 13 minutes. I'm going to limit every speaker to 1 minute and we'll turn the time. Okay? So, my right, please.
Hi all. Thank you for bringing this again. It's a really important conversation to have. And I wish that I could sit here and say that the provost and CFO, their speech clarified anything or that it provided anything new, but I can't say that it did. A few things that I can say that it did is that they expressed that the university is okay with remaining complicit in colonialism, that by remaining politically neutral, we are doing the best for the university, but I think the question right now is, whether or not it's the best for our students and you know, the people of Puerto Rico. And in terms of it being morally reprehensible, we cannot, legality is no way to measure what's moral. We can't talk about the law and assume that is, you know, what is the best for us all, because colonialism is legal. So thank you for bringing this to our attention, and you have my vote, and I hope that most of, or all of my assembly peers will vote for it.
Okay, I'm going to go to the next speaker. So I'm going to give you guys a quick warning, and after our full time, we still finish our sessions.
So just making a point of personal privilege, I think that everyone understands that this is a very morally wrong issue. I'm just raise your hand if you don't understand that this is a morally wrong issue. So based off of that, I'm just wondering if since we have so little time, we can keep our discussion to the impact of what we're doing to get to the actual resolution rather than morality, because I think we want to.
This is Chris.
Thanks so much for all the work. I reckon we're extremely frustrated with the administration actually frustrated about the presentation just now. I just want to drive home another point. First of all, definitely pass this to all
the others.
Well, definitely pass this to all the other assemblies, other university assemblies. I'm very happy to pass it through that. And I know this sounds like almost impossible, but do your best to find some sort of common ground with the administration, because if you can get the administration doing that a little bit on your side, that's going to help you a lot. Once you're arguing in front of the trustees and just in general for them to support your effort. I don't know if that's possible right now, but try to somehow cooperate with them. It's going to make things so much easier and so much more likely to succeed in the long run. But thank you so much for that.
Also, if you guys want to respond, I want to do two questions at once.
Yeah, so just as a brief response from this, I think the biggest piece of common ground is this distressed debt type of investment. So Rockwell's did this with Greece as well. These type of investments are very risky. These bonds were originally bought at a portfolio value of nearly $1 million, and as of September 2017, they were $300 million. So if we had holdings in this, they would have decreased by 2/3. So honestly, endowments have had trouble with private equity and hedge funds nationwide, and this is even riskier. This is not really something that should be in the charitable endowment. I frankly would invest in this myself, even if I was engaging in risky investments.
Like, 10 seconds.
I'm responsible.
Next is Joe.
I was going to talk about how, as an RA at Ferris Regional University of Puerto Rico here, that I deal with, that I watch every night, call their families, call their loved ones back in Puerto Rico. And yeah, I was told this is not actually a big deal. But the realistic point is this fundamentally affects people. Not a moral argument, it's not realistic. It's a realistic argument because people exist. This is a human rights issue. So yeah, I wasn't told to think more, but there is a very strong personal side that I see every night on this campus. People cry, people, you know, I have to do this every day. There's real people behind this.
I think I'm just echoing my reasons at this point, but on a very basic level, there's more transparency and the fact that Cornell doesn't have a lot of that. So this resolution, regardless of whether you agree or not, should be passed just simply because of that. I think that the Puerto Rican students at university claims that we're the Puerto Rican students on this campus, yet it goes and does this. So if they really do, then it should be very easy for them to do. And just to echo what I was saying, I do agree there, the speakers did nothing, at least for me, in terms of their banking, because I've got other questions. So that's that respect, support with you.
Thank you. Next is, MLT, if you have one more decision. Next study.
Hey, thank you so much for this resolution today, and I really appreciate all the work you did today. My question is more so in response to what Lewis and Siegel said. So their sentiments from my notes are pretty much that like EDP people about passing is like no one in higher ed is going to support it or like there's going to be a lot of pushback. So what besides sending a message do you think this resolution is going to do? Or like do you have any plans this resolution gets passed to like kind of work on making sure this effort goes forward?
So for me, and I think this point really assembly on this council encompasses all the ideas. And for us at this conference, we have an opportunity to present policy proposals that do have a lot of impact on when it comes to the administration, you know, taking to discuss. And we're going to make it a priority for us to bring up that point. Please even talk about for your resolution within that conference. So I'm optimistic about that. To carry over to the administration years. When there's a lot more pressure and also, you know, where there's a conversation to be had about other institutions, which will have been moved to some impact for change. So,
Gabe? Yeah, so I, you know, as because I think, you know, this is probably going to have to get circulated through a bunch of different assemblies, and because I have to be impartial on at least one. I am impartial on this, but I really do want to like press the issue in terms of like the cost and the benefits of this. And so, you know, it seemed like the provost and the chief financial officer didn't get into this very specific numbers for like what the financial cost of this is. But you know, but they estimated it to be in the tens or even up to like $100 million. And they also highlighted that the unrestricted part of the endowment goes to the student financial aid. So I think it's worth considering that if we did impose such a requirement on our endowment managers, and this did decrease the endowment, it's not unreasonable to think that this would come out of student financial aid. And so I'm not saying whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just think it's a thing, and I think it's up to us to really deliberate in
10 seconds.
You know, what sorts of decisions we want to make regarding that, you know, even given the limited information.
Next is Dale.
So I actually do have a question to ask. The first question is actually a little confused because people keep pointing out that Masby's doing political, and maybe this is the way I think about things, but I don't see this as being political whatsoever. We're not advocating for a different political stance on Puerto Rico, regardless of anything. This is financial and humanitarian. There's really nothing political about it. I'm wondering if you can agree your history with that. The other question I have is concerning the Fulton Amendment. Are you planning to formally push that forward? And then the final question is concerning working with the graduate students and faculty members and employees. Have you started talks with any members of the assemblies or the Senate?
After I finish responding to this, I'll make the motion for the amendment and get that done formally. We haven't reached out to the other assemblies yet. I know I talked to my trailer about hearing last week. And, I mean, passing this week to give the other assemblies and say it's passed, I mean, like after this, I can contact them and do this, and that's definitely great progress. With that motion to strike the given whereas clause under the request amendment and replace it with the whereas clause with the second clause. So this is line 15 through 17. I should read it out word for word.
You should read that.
So, motion to amend the resolution 28, lines 15, 16, 17 to remove all text and to replace with whereas, comma, in that said letter, comma, Hedge Clippers and its partner organizations outline the adverse economic impacts of lobbying done on behalf of Broncos and other fund managers to the economic well-being and recovery of Puerto Rico, semicolon.
Okay, I think it's that. Don, passes for that. So all those in favor?
this group.
Okay, so I have some questions about the impact of this return. There's some things that were raised by the provost as well as so I'm wondering what the effect or the impact of divesting is on the actual people of Puerto Rico. So when you look at divesting when it comes to Sudan, when you look at how it impacts South Africa during apartheid, what essentially that does is that it affects the ability of that entire of that country or the state to import territory to borrow. And so it creates a smaller market with less customers, creating higher yields, so on and so forth. That makes sense when you're doing this for South Africa, when you're trying to sort of force them to do something. But I'm wondering how this impacts Puerto Rico in the sense that does this actually negatively impact Puerto Rico rather than that?
So, yeah, a couple of things. Well, firstly, the amount divested, likely, my guess, somewhere between 1 and 10 million. Really wouldn't affect the volumes in the market. Second thing, by getting the funds out of the auto post and onto the open market to be scooped up by some other fund that doesn't have a position in it. Like as this memo was outlined, you want to get these funds out of the Aquafina Seniors Bondholders Coalition because they're the ones doing all the lobbying and trying to switch the cash to them and the GO. So moving it out of there would be increasing their commitment to lobbying in that sense. You'd also be making a statement.
So we got to move on through. Okay, so say it needs outpost hands. Whose hands would it go to?
So it would go in the open market. I mean, one of the outposts isn't purchasing anymore, so they would likely put it back on. So one third of the market is this. Venus coalition and the other two thirds is other funds who are not actively lobbying as part of this organization. So, I mean, probability has it that someone not in this coalition would pick up the debt, so it would be less that this coalition would have to lobby for. I think us actually is. So, Cornell alone taking action on this issue probably isn't going to be much. I mean, the state, this is a lot in changing our policies on distress debt. There's a lot in the future. Having a couple organizations going on and making commitments and to not give money to the funds in this coalition will really do a lot because if this coalition doesn't have funds to earn profits on, it's going to stop lobbying. Like, they have lawyers running around Puerto Rico, like just causing havoc at meetings and just turning things around and submitting statements. And actually, this coalition cost the Puerto Rican government millions of dollars to respond to everything about legal fees and things like that. So it has a lot of implications, but this is really the best first step.
Thank you. Chris, do you want to say
something? Yeah, I also wanted to say that I think the provost mentioned domestic apartheid in South Africa. And I think if anything, it shows that. Like, we're so skeptical of the extent to which this will actually help Puerto Rico, like, we have how dire the situation is. I mean, South Africa at least has autonomy to go to the American policies and have to change. At least there's an ability to hope that we can South Africa will change policies. In the case of Puerto Rico, I agree that we have to appreciate this point. So I also just want to add to the junction with that. There's not a lot of very challenging. I mean, at this point, it's just trying to prove that the statute can advocate for itself. So, I think our sentence is important to recognize that political lack of ability to deal with it. I think this is all back to the fact that it's really important. It's the subject of the statute that we're talking about. I think that's important.
That's a good
one. We don't need to look at things as well as our rights. It's important to recognize that we can hold our hands.
So I'm just a little confused because obviously, like, very close friends, right, happening in South Africa and Sudan. My confusion lies within the concept of the divestment. Like, in the sense that when we're divesting from fossil fuels, we're like, hey, like, fossil fuels. We're divesting from South Africa, we're saying, okay, South Africa, we need itself needs to change. When we divest from Sudan, the Sudan itself needs to change. When we divest from Puerto Rico, like the future is desert, like I'm just confused about how, because when we're doing this for other industries and other nations, it's negatively impacting those nations and negatively impacting that industry. I'm just confused on like how this is happening.
I have
a second.
Okay, so right, I see two things. I understand what you're saying. So right now there are several lawsuits going on trying to declare bankruptcy process that Puerto Rico is going through to become constitutional because of violations of the Equal Amendment Equal Protection Clause. So I think for anything we have a real opportunity to join forces, join voices, join the lawsuits are saying that this process is constitutional. By moving our funds from an entity that is actively exploiting that process, it allows for them to give more credence to that argument. So perhaps it won't necessarily solve Puerto Rico's debt crisis, but it will add to the policies of the government to say that this process must be constitutional. Puerto Rico must be given chapter 9 about the rights.
Okay, so we do have two people on this paper list, this is Shivani, but then the thing is, we are 5 minutes past time. I'm going to talk for a vote, but if you guys just have anything to say, if that hasn't been mentioned before, then you guys have to speak.
Hello. Okay, so I just want to address a few different things. One, I encourage people to look into Jubilee Debt Campaign and the Committee for the Abolition of Debt, which are international bodies that are moving for these debts to be no longer considered because of the nature of these. The second thing is that we're investing. I think the issue with these like initiatives coming is that they clearly value alumni relations over like moral reprehensibility. To address Gabe's point, I think that Cornell has, my belief is that Cornell has people who are attending to like rectifying financial crises. So if we decide to divest, like I would like to believe that like Cornell would have like an institution that would try to find alternative means of creating. So that way we can continue to like work on those financial issues. I could be wrong, and maybe it would take some time, but I would like to believe that that's their job. And to Bernard's point, I hope that like even though we might not necessarily be helping Puerto Rico, we're at least discouraging future runs, and that we're joining this movement, like the Jubilee Debt Campaign, to work towards like the creation, like working against the creation of interest.
Okay, thank you. Grace, did you want to?
Hunter said to read up on the Calvin report, and I did just now. And it looks like it was originally designed to advocate for the students from divestment. And I applaud you guys for supporting the students and going back to the origins. But I do, I am worried about low income students and recipients of financial aid, as you mentioned before, it can actually have a tangible embedded impact.
Just to respond from this, in our annual report, Cornell does not invest in derivatives that are just speculative on things because you can lose a lot of money, and we tell our money managers that. We can tell money managers not to invest in direct distress debt. I mean, people have lost financial aid because the Puerto Rican debt has gone from $1 billion to $300 billion overall. I mean, it is lost. It's a risky investment, like it's not going down. I mean, that's a very important pitch to make. Like, we lose money on these types of things.
Yeah. I'm going to call for a vote. We need a second to call the chair. All right, all those in favor of this, of passing this resolution, raise your hands and clap very much. Okay, can you count? We're not going to come in here. All those against? All those against? All abstentions? All right, my vote of 20. 22-0-2 with passes. Congratulations, guys. Thank you so much. So there's been a motion to extend the meeting plan to add much. Is there a second? All those in favor? All those in favor of extending the meeting time by 20 minutes? Okay, so that's that. You see how many people are raise it high, please. Raise it high. All those against. All abstentions. So 9-13-2-1. All those in favor of extending the meeting by 10 minutes, raise your hands and clap. I'm going to recognize TJ. Stop. Is this not 10 minutes or 7 minutes? Yeah, we did. Alright, all in favor 7 minutes. Alright, we're going to extend it back to 7 minutes. Alright. So, we're going to end exactly at 6:37, okay? Alright, so, resolution 30. And sponsors. Who's the sponsors? Okay, 29. Resolution 29. And the sponsor said before. Yeah. 6 minutes. Okay, for the second time, motion to move resolution 29 to position of the day. And we can't do that. Alright, I'll just introduce it quickly and then we'll move on to the next motion.
This is a bylaw amendment that proposed to track past unanimously. What it does essentially is it just codifies the language into Article BII Section 1, minus 43 to 446, so we can bylaw. What this does is it defines how community members interact with the assembly through resolutions. Right now, community members aren't allowed to sponsor resolutions. As we just saw earlier, for instance, we had a Puerto Rico resolution that had a lot of community support, that had a lot of people doing as much work as I think was with the sponsor resolutions, but aren't allowed to enter games as sponsors. This seeks to change it to add in language that says, the one that we had therefore recalled, that any member of the community has the right to add a resolution to the assembly agenda as a sponsor of a meeting or necessitating a spirit assembly member to sponsor it, as long as they can go through the committee or if they can get the right approval to have this from the assembly.
Yeah, I just want to quickly add that most of that section for amending was added very quickly at one of the first meetings in fall of 2016. And this resolution really cleans up what was already there by making it clear how this process is supposed to work. We're not assuming that any resolutions on the agenda. We have actually added one or two resolutions past meetings amended that have had no student assembly member, ex officio member, or committee chair as sponsors, which is kind of a violation of SA precedent, and this clearly says that please allow in the future with the capacity being that there can be no more than three non-SA sponsors of a civil resolution. Sponsors, to clarify, are the name to the individuals at the top of the resolution. They're the ones bringing the resolution to the board, which is set up for authors, which ranges usually from one person to 400, depending on the resolution.
All right, speakers, this is Dave. You're all good.
Okay, so the first thing I want to say is I absolutely like to agree that we should limit the number of sponsors on resolutions, and I would like to add the number of authors. I think it's like ridiculous that we print like 10 pages of people who just like saw it once. That's like ridiculous that needs to go. So thank you for making like the right selection of that. In terms of the whole, like the whole thing, I oppose this. I think it's kind of ridiculous to like put resolutions on the agenda that don't even have a single member of the assembly like willing to sign it. Like just completely pointless bureaucracy to do this. Like, if you can't get a single person of the assembly to put their name on it, why would you even discuss it? Like, that's insane. So I think like it's like, all deliberative bodies use this process, or at least one person has to sign on to get it on the board. So I think that's yeah. So I would just support striking that out, and I would support striking it out, but and then adding a line that limits the number of offers. I think that would.
Perfect. Is there a response?
Yeah, who's up?
My left.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For what that last one gave said, why would we even discuss it?
My answer is for a democratic body. And I think that even if someone might want to put their name on something, if members of the community deem it necessary that they want their assembly to talk about it, I think they have a right to add that. Also, I think I would agree with you that there is a lot of political bureaucracy. One of them is the necessity of getting some members to sign on. Great things. This just opens it up so that members of the community can better engage with us. We can have more channels of engagement. That's the end goal.
I would also like to point out that Representative Kaufman, Vice President Kaufman, is the one that added this charter to our bylaws, and he did not object when the resolution was passed through this assembly without his student assembly response on it.
All right, next there's TJ. You have 1 minute, sorry. Okay, and Debbie, you're next.
For the record, I think CACNU can pay on transparency for the essay, and this is one of the first ways I've seen my lab that I actually added transparency to his body, so I wouldn't see why you would want to have a mission for this resolution. I just want to put that on that.
Is there anyone else that wants to speak? All right. I'm going to let Gabe call this was the same as you.
Yeah, okay. So, in response to your point that this is like more democratic, letting people who like, weren't elected put things on our agenda to take up time, if they can't even get a single person of the SA to say, like, this nominally looks good, that's not democratic. That's just like, let people come up the process. Like, look, guys, I know you have elections coming up, and, you know, we want to like, put resolutions out, you know, new community, but this is pointless. This will change nothing. There's no reason for this. This will literally do nothing at all. And the only thing it could possibly do is bad. So, with that, I motion to table indefinitely.
This is definitely. Just one second. Okay. All's in favor. All's in favor. Four. All those against? All right, does not pass. Can I have a motion to table?
Motion to table until next week.
All those in favor, table. Okay, it passes. All right, so, okay. So this 6:37, the meeting is adjourned. Well, we will go into executive session. Can members of the community go down to our as they are in the room? Brandon, did you want to see something? You're good? Always good to see you.